Tonight I want to talk about being prepared for the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. There's a group of people I have practiced with for a long time, and it seems like everyone in that group was having a rough patch a couple of months ago. And in fact, just about everybody I knew was having a rough patch. And there was a lot of talk about how to get through the rough patches. And certainly this practice offers us a lot of skills for the days that are difficult. In the blog, the Alameda Sangha blog on our website, you can actually search for 5 questions to explore extreme anger. I think it was August of last year that came up during a talk that I gave. They really sort of go through the Dharma approach to the suffering that is that anger. Most of our rough patches are rough because what is happening we don't like. And whatever kind of not liking our response is, whether it's anger or regret or remorse or sadness, it's a form of suffering. And the practice and the Dharma is all about how to end that suffering. And we can also prepare for rough spots. In fact, most of us within the next 2 months are going to find ourselves facing the big rough spot called the holidays. You know, for a lot of people, it's just pure fun and joyous. But a lot of people have a hard time. You know, it's very rare for people who've just gone into recovery to, you know, at the beginning or the middle of November to still be sober the second week in January, because it's just a really tough time for a lot of people. So there are a lot of workshops and day-longs that are offered about this time of year. And in fact, Pauletta and Baruch are giving one on November 23rd. I think it'll be announced and, you know, publicized, but you heard it here first. So that's a great opportunity to prepare for the holidays. You know, even if they are joyous and wonderful, it's great to go through wonder and joy mindfully. So that would be a great way to prepare. The very best way to be prepared for the difficulties of life, though, is to have a regular meditation practice. It's as if, say, a fireman or woman were to go through the training and get in really excellent physical condition, and then lie around the firehouse for years and not have a fire come up and lose all of that toning, and then a 6-alarm fire breaks out and they're just not up to it because they've lost the conditioning, the training that was meant to prepare them for that eventuality. So this is a practice. You know, we've got to kind of keep up our chops, as a musician would say. You know, I've got a good friend who's a professional cellist. And every day, whether she wants to or not, whether she likes it or not, she usually loves it. But, you know, she's got to play that cello, got to keep at it. And so I want to recommend the minimalist daily practice of, I don't know what it is for you. For me, it's 3 breaths. Before I get out of bed, before I start my day, I watch my body breathe 3 times consecutively. If I have to start over, I start over. I have touched the elements of a clear mind at the beginning of the day. I've gotten that tone back, and I can go back to it. I can just remember at any point what it feels like to be mindful, to have focus, and to have an accepting heart. And that's what it takes. And then if I get a chance during the day, and I usually get a chance to be at rest physically and mentally and have a devoted period of meditation, that's terrific. That's just, you know, whipped cream. I urge you to have that daily practice. If you don't think you've got time, surely you have time to breathe three times. The point is that we need to be present to get through whatever it is that comes up that we feel like we have to get through. And I want to quote Franz Kafka because he has such a notoriously interesting perspective on things. He says, you can hold back from suffering of the world. You have permission to, and it's in accordance with your nature. But perhaps this very holding back is the one suffering you could have avoided. So, don't miss your life. Be there. The only way to get through the hard times is to get through them. The way to do it with the least suffering is mindfully. Bring your best game. Open the heart, open the mind. Wendell Berry has a poem. He talks about the natural world. I want to expand it to all experience. He says, as soon as I felt the necessity to learn about the non-human world, I wished to learn about it in a hurry. And then I began to learn, perhaps, the most important lesson that nature had to teach me, that I could not learn about her in a hurry. The most important learning, that of experience, can be neither summoned nor sought out. The most worthy knowledge cannot be acquired by what is known as study, though that is necessary and has its use. It comes in its own good time and in its own way to the person who will go where it lives and wait and be ready and watch. Hurry is beside the point, useless, an obstruction. The thing is to be attentively present. To sit and wait is as important as to move. Patience is as valuable as industry. What is to be known is always there. When it reveals itself to you, or when you come upon it, it is by chance. The only condition is your being there and being watchful. I think that's a wonderful definition of the experience of meditating. You go and you be there and you watch. You see what comes up. And you begin to understand why it's there. And what can be done to ease whatever suffering comes along with it. You learn to take care of the mind. And when the mind is well taken care of, we begin to become aware of our true nature, awareness itself. Lao Tzu says, search your heart and see the way to do is to be. What we are is the answer to what we should do about what comes up. That's that inscrutable Eastern way of looking at things. So we can prepare for life through our practice, through a regular meditation practice. But you know, we also need to prepare for our practice. And there are a number of ways to do this. Traditionally, it is through ethics, generosity, and then meditation. And the open heart I mentioned earlier is important to be able to see and appreciate and care for what arises in meditation. And we help open the heart by being generous, by holding the door open, by supporting the Sangha so that new people can come in and learn about what we're doing. Buddha said that we benefit from generosity three times, before, during, and after. And I'm going to put it in my words, my experience. When I think about donating, kind of the first question I ask myself is, can I afford it? And then, particularly like with Donna, I can afford whatever I know I can afford, you know. And it pleases me to know that I'm not destitute. I do have a little extra to give, and I can celebrate that. So I think the way Buddha says is that the mind is uplifted. In the moment when I give, it's a very pleasant thrill that I know I'm doing something good. And boy, I don't know about you, but moments like that are rare in my life where I just really know that this is a good thing to do. So there's this wonderful feeling of satisfaction. And then afterwards, I know that I've taken care of self and other, and thereby broken down this sense of separation and the resulting isolation of self. With ethics, it's pretty obvious that the mind is calm when we don't have regret or remorse or an uneasy conscience. It's simple. It's called the bliss of blamelessness. I lost it a couple of weeks ago. I was at a family gathering and I got caught up in the old family humor. And I said something that was not wise speech. And I felt bad about it. And I lost that feeling of ease. I had to make amends. I had to mend the fences, take care of business, and also practice. Why? Why did I do that? Where did that come from? So these guidelines of the five precepts, not to hurt other beings with physical action or speech or sexual energy or theft, and to protect mindfulness by not abusing intoxicants. Those are the five guidelines. You know, almost everything that's presented in Buddhism isn't really a should. It's a suggestion. It's not a yardstick for how good a person you are. It's something that can be helpful, that can make life better for you. And if it doesn't do that, then it's not a good should, and you should abandon it. But try it. See if you like it. Also, you know, there are ways to prepare for meditation just before. If your mind is really jumpy, you know, maybe that's a good day for you to exercise before you sit down. You know, if there's a lot of restlessness. If you're very sleepy, well, maybe a nap would be a good idea. You know, and once you have gotten over that, then try sitting. If you are hungry, I think not long ago I gave a Dharma talk about some mental disturbance I had during my meditation because I was hungry. I was late for lunch and I sat and meditated before eating and, you know, spent the meditation on hunger, which, you know, I learned about. So maybe take care of your body a little before you sit down. And the benefit of this daily practice doesn't appear in the next day's meditation. wonderful things can appear in meditation, but it can also be a session of being troubled, being uncomfortable. The benefit of this regular meditation practice shows up in our lives. When I was teaching people who are in recovery, I would tell them that. I will promise you, if you will sit every day for a month, you're going to see your life get better. And a lot of them came up and told me, you know, you were right. It worked. When you do have a wonderful meditation session, savor it. When you have a lousy meditation session, just remember, it's a learning experience. Be patient with it, with yourself. Open your heart to whatever it has to teach you, and come back the next day. Thank you.